Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Evident Footprints. As the man said, I'm Don Nikoloff, and we are now into December 5th, 2008, or if you're on the West Coast, 2004. No, let's go back. let's say January 5th, 2008, or January 4th, 2008. It's early in the morning, and strange things come out of your mouth this time of the night or the morning. Before I introduce tonight's guest, I just want to briefly cover something that we've been reporting. There seems to be some conflicting information coming out, and of course, we know they can do magic with television video, so we don't have confirmation yet of the actual facts. Although, right now, it appears that the administration is parading an image of Henry Paulson on the airwaves, and there is now a schedule on the U.S. Treasury docket that Mr. Paulson is to address some folks in New York this coming Monday. If that's the case, that's actually good news, because it was reported that he had passed away by Christopher Story. Christopher Story had been given the information. We're trying to determine if this is disinformation or Mr. Story is being fed disinformation. And if that is the case, that would be on purpose, that someone's doing that to discredit him. He has been reporting nonstop for a couple of years now on Wantagate, the missing trillions of dollars. And it just gets more complex as we go along. I'm just reporting the facts that are reported on Mr. Story's website. And I have been able to sort of corroborate some of what he is saying by email communications that are posted online in response to, is this really true? Of course, we're not seeing anything in the mainstream media. His argument is talk to the mainstream media and ask them why. He claims that he has double and triple checked his information, and we can only trust that he's telling the truth. Of course, he's not the one embezzling the trillions of dollars, so he has reason to report what he's reporting. He has been very accurate with much of the information, despite the fact that the media has not at all reported this story, and that in and of itself is enough to lend quite a bit of credibility to his writings. He's also documented much of what not just Ambassador Wanta or Michael C. Cottrell claims, but what the bank records actually show. So this saga is going on, and I'm presuming we will find out something for sure, if not over the weekend, by next Monday, when Mr. Paulson will be addressing, according to the U.S. Treasury webpage, some people in New York. So we will keep you abreast of the situation as events unfold. With that, I'd like to bring tonight's guest on board. He is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and also a friend. And he has become a regular on Evident Footprints for quite some time. Actually, before I joined the BBSRadio.com family, and his name is Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show tonight.
Thank you, Don. It's always a pleasure. You know that.
Well, it's a pleasure for us to have you here, too. That's an understatement, actually. In the recent weeks, Jim, you've been talking about your career, your upbringing into a an environment of science, and you described how you studied, you got your hands on some books, and you were exposed at a very early age to some advanced concepts in science in a few areas. You were describing to the listeners your involvement with Erector sets and how that got you interested in building things, and your experimentation in, let's say, electromechanical devices, and your study of physics for a while until you discovered Nikola Tesla and a few people who were actually carrying on with Tesla's work. And you intimated several stories, actually, about your friendships with Dominic Lucchesi and Gene Carini, Warren Goetz, and your device, and we could call it an invention, I guess, your dual synchronous capacitor that you developed for Bethlehem Steel, which saved them quite a bit of money. And
that was quite a contraption, and very successful at that.
Yes, and I did tell the listeners, and actually we had some listeners go to the site and email me about your pictures. They're quite in awe and very impressed with the size of that invention and the pictures themselves. Those are really something to see. It really backs up the story. I invite anyone to go to directlightproductions.com, go to the science page, and you can view those pictures. When you click on the pictures, you can actually expand them, blow them up to a larger size, and really see the detail. So they're there for your perusal. Also, Jim sent some pictures of components, or let's say partial views of a flying saucer and the hangar in which the saucer was being built. And so you can take a look. Now, we left off, we were talking about the Tesla wireless last week when we ran out of time, and I know you wanted to pick up there with that topic. There was the dispute between Tesla and Marconi as to who actually had created the radio and that technology. And I'll turn it over to you, Jim, and you can continue. Are you still with us, Jim?
Well, there was some kind of a glitch, Don, but I'm back. I don't know exactly what happened.
Okay.
Where did you leave off in your... The last thing I heard was the synchronous capacitor.
Oh, okay. Well, you had told us about Tesla's wireless, and we were kind of left in the air because we ran out of time, but this show being a continuation each week, we were going to pick up where we left off in regard to the wireless. And the
it's an interesting concept because wireless, in the mind of people nowadays, literally means like a form of radio. Or, our cell phones, for instance, are wireless connections. And the devices that couple into our computers, in many cases, are wireless. But for Tesla, it had a totally different meaning. True wireless actually finds itself evolving from Tesla's study of one-wire circuits. And one-wire circuits are really quite interesting because in the use of AC, there really isn't any need for a return path. The reason we use it is simply because of the fact that the technology that we have now, even though it was Tesla's invention, is essentially a combination, if you will, of the AC idea superimposed over a DC circuit. But later on, Tesla realized that the true AC, you don't need that situation. And you can literally foster
because this will carry on one way. And
It's really quite a thing to see. I've managed to do it a couple of times in small scale, and so have some of my friends. But then from there, the next step is to do away with that one wire and go to true wireless. But it does not mean conductorless. In fact, the wire that remains is the ground or the planet itself. And so what Tesla was actually doing was using his one-wire technology as a means of transmitting power into the globe itself, using the globe as a conductor, and thereby making his electrical disturbances available worldwide. Naturally, this required putting the Earth into a type of resonance, and that opened up a whole new field of exploration for Tesla, which led to some of his concepts in weaponry and earthquakes and all these other things. But his main objective was actually the transmission of power from one point to another without wires. And what's interesting, of course, is that in order for this to happen, the Earth's electric field has to be disturbed in such a way that its intensity is changed radially. And what I mean by that is, if you can picture a signal, it's like a ball changing its diameter in tune to something else, as opposed to the sine wave that we normally think about. You now have a situation in which you've got a radially disposed disturbance, which is actually spherical in its essence. And this led to a lot of controversy because Einstein at that time had been more or less romanced into demonstrating the relationship between radio as conceived by Marconi and his own theories of relativity, which govern the traveling of light and other electromagnetic radiations. And here was a situation which is really bizarre, because if I have a transmission tower in New York and I have a receiving tower in London, and I send a radio signal across the Atlantic, I can literally measure the time lag between when that signal was released and when it was received, and that kind of information, along with the speed of light and other characteristics, can be used to literally measure the distance between the two antennas. Now, what's very interesting in Tesla's case is, if you have that same those same two towers, but you are now using one of them as a single conductor transmitter, let's say in New York, and your receiver in London, you can't measure any time lag between the two signals because it's the same signal. And so actually Tesla was talking about situations that varied speeds greater than that of light, and simultaneity between the transmission of a signal and the reception of a signal. And these were all things he had already done. And so I think that in itself is one of the reasons why the establishment was just all over this guy. And we all know what eventually happened there. But what's interesting is I know people who have duplicated a lot of this research independently. I have a very dear friend for 35 years or more. I won't mention his name without his permission, but he's an independent researcher in New York, and he has, in fact, written articles and demonstrated repeatedly that he can launch a signal using the Tesla method and another signal using ordinary radio coupling between a transmitter and a receiver in the same room. Of course, it's a pretty long room. I forget the dimensions of it, but let's say 60 or 80 feet long. And you can see very, very clearly on a dual-trace oscilloscope, the arrival of the non-Hertzian wave is very much ahead of the radio signal. So all this gibberish about nothing can go faster than the speed of light, and all this kind of stuff is really an outgrowth of a modified understanding of Einsteinian relativity. Now, I'm not up on relativity, but not to that extent, at least. But I place a lot of faith in what I've seen with my own two eyes. And I firmly believe that that can be done. And by the way, just as an interesting side note, that type of experimental arrangement. It has been calculated by a number of physicists who don't adhere to the idea that you can't exceed the speed of light, that if you built a pair of scissors, just ordinary scissors, long enough, and snapped the handles together, the point of intersection would propagate down the length of the scissors and very rapidly exceed the speed of light. Also, you've got Cherenkov radiation, which the Russians had played around with in water-cooled nuclear reactors. And those forms of radiation have been demonstrated to have superluminal characteristics also. So I always try to be kind of humble and say that who am I to limit what the universe can do?
Yeah, I like to be a bit more humble than that and ask you something. You mentioned that Tesla had to create a state of resonance in the Earth. Now, my understanding is that there is a frequency that the Earth exhibits. It's debatable whether it's 8 hertz or 7.84 hertz. I've heard different numbers. Is it possible that Tesla was actually tapping into that frequency and then regenerating it back into the Earth? In other words, as if he was borrowing the energy that was there?
Yeah, that's a possibility. But even if he wasn't doing that, Don, by studying the... I know we do know from his own records that he studied profusely the effects of... its ability to ring in response to things like lightning strikes, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And if nothing else, that would have brought him to that same information. And, of course, also, it's important to understand that if you have a system that's capable of resonating like a bell, for instance, it can carry either a pure tone or multiple harmonics all at the same time. The only thing that's going to change is the amplitude of each wave fraction.
Mm-hmm.
So he could very well either have used, if there is something that is producing a, let's say, a 7.9 or whatever basic frequency inside the planet, he might be able to use that as a carrier wave, or he might just say, oh, well, now we know what the necessary frequency is for my own equipment to produce, and then go ahead and pump the corresponding frequency into the planet. But bear in mind that in order to be able to treat the entire Earth as a piece of laboratory apparatus, not only do you have to have one heck of an unusual mind to even conceive of such a thing, but you also have to have the wherewithal at your disposal to produce an enormous electrical disturbance, because the planet is not in place, as you know.
Yeah, my mind sort of trips over the images that we were taught in science class about Benjamin Franklin flying a kite with this key there and allowing him to discover electricity through a lightning strike. No one ever questioned the fact that that kite kept flying and and he kept holding on to it. You know, you would think somewhere along the line he would have been electrocuted. But
I heard all kinds of explanations for that, but actually it may not even be a true story. Who knows? I can tell you one thing, I wouldn't do it.
Yes. You mentioned something, too, that, and I don't mean to go off on a tangent, but you were talking about resonance and ringing. I don't know if this was rumor. I tend to think that this was maybe some disinformation put out there, maybe to disguise something about the first Apollo landings on the moon. When they launched the lunar lander from the surface of the moon, and I guess there was something was ejected and struck the moon, and the story was that the moon reverberated for 8 minutes.
Yeah,
now,
I've heard that. That was the rocket pack that they left behind after they, you know, took off again.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't need it, so they dropped it. But the most interesting thing about that, and we'd have to save this for another show because it's so tangential, but
yeah,
the most interesting thing about that is that not only did it suggest that the moon reverberated because they measured it, but in order for it to respond so vigorously and for such a duration of time, it was suggested by a lot of astrophysicists that the moon is hollow.
Yes.
And I think that's pretty cool because H.G. Wells suggested that in, what was it, 1890s when he wrote the story, or 1910 or whatever it was when he wrote the first Men in the Moon novel.
Now, to your knowledge, did Tesla ever make any remarks in that regard?
Not to my knowledge, but don't forget, I don't know everything the guy ever said. I didn't hear about it. You know, my interest in Tesla's work, which would include the moon, was in association with that really amazing article that he wrote about the rotation of the moon, which I think we touched on already, but I'm not positive. Other than that, I haven't heard anything else, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean to get you off track there. It just popped up into my memory, or from my memory banks, and I wanted to address that. I've got some... We should do a show on that sometime, because there are a lot of anomalies in that whole story.
Oh, yeah.
If you take the Van Allen belt into consideration...
Well, it's like Tesla said, and this is something he did say, not only regarding the moon, but our own planet. He said all the things that are studied separately, like you mentioned the Van Allen belt, we'll throw in a couple of other things, the Earth's magnetic field, the Earth's electric field, the gyroscopic properties of the planet, you know, all of these things, its axis precession, and what have you. For some strange reason, the way most people think, they like to study those topics in a completely unrelated manner, because whatever one appeals to their area of expertise is the most easy to delve into. But what Tesla did was he studied the whole thing holistically so that he could understand the divine piece of machinery that we live upon. And I think until that kind of logic is... reinstated and people start looking at things for what they really are, there's a lot of stuff that's going to be remaining in darkness and misunderstanding.
Well, it only makes sense to look at it that way. I mean, how can you contemplate the moon without taking into account the sun?
Well, don't forget, people do it all the time. You know, it's like you take a cat and you anesthetize it, freeze it, chop it up into small sections, put it under a microscope, and look at all the different layers of what used to be a cat. And the people who do stuff like that will tell you, I am studying life. there seems to be a certain disparity there. You know? So it's like, it's almost like the human being has some kind of problem with holistic thinking. Would you agree, Don?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have that occurring in real time today, pretty much all over the planet.
Yeah.
We've got social structure, political, educational, religious, on and on that fit that description that you just gave. We call food things that don't even resemble any of the qualities of food. We synthesize things and we change them, the meaning and the originality into something else and give it a name and then we adjust or readjust our consciousness to that thing, as if it was something that grew out of the ground. It was something that came out of nature. Totally ignoring the fact that it's been synthesized. Food is a good example of that. And we do that with knowledge, too, don't we?
Oh, heavens, yes.
And I would say we do it with religion. Politics is born out of that and would die if they didn't do that.
Yeah,
say
well,
one thing and do another.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so now... we wanted to go, I didn't mean to take you off on that tangent, but we are thinking outside of the box, which Tesla did quite a bit. And I wanted you to, if you would, describe for our listeners Tesla's demonstration of his wireless and what he encountered from people who were seeing this for the first time.
That was quite interesting, and it was very early on, I might add. Because the original wireless demonstration was nowhere near what he eventually manifest, you know, many years later. But it was striking enough to curl the hair of the people of the time. And frankly, the first one took place, I don't remember the year, but it was in the original Madison Square Garden, which of course is two gardens ago. So, give you some idea of the time slot. And apparently they put a great big boat, I mean a great big tank, in the middle of the arena. And Tesla brought in this strange-looking craft, which resembled a submarine traveling on the surface. And he placed it in the tank. And then he got up on a podium quite a few feet away and proceeded to direct the craft, you know, to do all kinds of fancy things. And people were just awestruck by it. And I might add, for those folks who are, you know, diehard supporters of Marconi as a father of radio, that in this time, Marconi wasn't even out of school yet. So I think our friend Tesla more or less has a market cornered on the concept of wireless in both ways of using the term.
Sure. I would like to interject also that though there were some documents that came out, and this is for the new listeners to this story, in my own research I came upon the Admiral Francis J. Higginson document that was a request to Tesla while he was in Colorado Springs to produce these remote control or radio units for what was called Light Vessel 66, which was parked off the coast of Nantucket, about 60 miles from Nantucket, in fact. They had a ship out there, in other words, and this ship was acting as a lighthouse, and the purpose of this wireless was to alert incoming ships to the proximity of the dangerous pathways through the ocean there, in, off, off the coast. In other words, potential rock formations or whatever. I don't have specific information if that was even true. I would think the water 60 miles off the coast would be quite deep, and that would not even be a consideration. But it was most likely something that the government was going to use in a covert way and not necessarily for the purpose that it was stated. But that request for 8 of these units from Tesla went through George Scherf, his assistant, and Tesla also had a power station or some kind of a station there on Nantucket that was supposed to be the facility through which this worked. Let's say a transmitting facility or a transmitting and receiving facility. And you mentioned that he used this in a submarine. Now, Tesla, I found, was actually speaking about this, and I came across an article in the Brooklyn Eagle from 1895. He had referred to the fact that he could do this back then. And this whole issue of the wireless was portrayed to have occurred around 1904. I believe that was the time when they actually started giving Marconi credit for this. So it was very interesting that some 9 or 10 years prior to when this came out, Tesla had already spoken, and it was printed in a newspaper in Brooklyn, where he talked quite a bit about the fact that he could control things using radio waves, which says quite a bit about where he was. It even casts more doubt on Marconi's involvement. I don't know exactly when Marconi was born, but let's say you are correct in that. We would be looking at another 4 or 5 years prior to whatever age Marconi was when Tesla made this first presentation. He may not have even been in school. Or
that's true. I don't know the dates either, but I think we'd be easy enough to look them up.
Sure, sure. But I thought I would mention that because there was this request in 1899, even though the issue of patents and the public notification that this had occurred is, in terms of the government, didn't occur until about 1904. Yet, Tesla had spoken to someone, some reporter at the Brooklyn Eagle, and I was able to find a copy of it. It's online, actually, where he's talking about the whole process. So, go ahead. So he's giving this demonstration to all these incredulous believers, or doubters, I should say.
The other demonstration was to, I forget the gentleman's name, but he was the right-hand man of J.P. Morgan. And that took place on a dock on the Hudson. It was either the Hudson or the East River, not sure which, and in New York. And the guy couldn't believe what he was watching. Because in those days, the idea of a force being applied at a distance, or whatever you want to call it, was bordering almost on mystical, not necessarily scientific. And this was one of the things that was eventually brought to Morgan's attention. And I think that that's one of the reasons why he was willing to back Tesla initially on the construction of Wharton Cliff, was, you know, basically due to the report received from this other gentleman. But anyway, getting back to the main thrust of the story here, I know one guy whose name I won't mention because he's been in enough difficulties as it is on account of his work, who has duplicated a great deal of this kind of technology. And he was actually living on the West Coast at the time that this interesting little anecdote takes place. And strangely enough, he was using the remains of Marconi's ground plane. I've never seen it, but it's supposed to be very high up on the Palisades, somewhere out there on the coast, and has a ground path clear down to the ocean level through a bored hole. It goes all the way down, and apparently it's a very low impedance ground. And he was literally living in a tent. He had another tent, which constituted his laboratory, and he reconstructed all of this Tesla-type equipment, hooked it up to this Marconi grounding mat, and then he would proceed to walk up the coast with a receiver in his hand and a fishing rod with a, I forget how long the rod was, but it was a good-sized rod with a copper line on it instead of nylon, and he would drag that through the water, and that was his antenna, and he could pick up his own signal from that ground rod through a one-wire circuit for miles. And interestingly enough, what happened to him was that one day he decided that in the beginning he was just using what we call CW signals, which is like a continuous wave function.
Mm-hmm.
He decided to explore the possibility of integrating that apparatus with a true radio receiver so that if there was any possibility of voice or some type of modulated signal, he could pick that up and study it. And he was keeping a log of all the various frequencies, and all of a sudden he hit a channel. He never did tell me what channel it was, but he hit a channel on there. And here's these two guys talking. They're talking not only on a totally unauthorized frequency, but on a system that's not supposed to be recognized by the United States government because it's not radio. And I won't go into details about what he heard, only because if it got him in trouble, it might get us in trouble. But let's just say this. It was two government individuals talking about an assassination. And he called me to tell me this story, and I said, listen, I said, I don't know if you realize this or not, but, you know, if you're being monitored, you can't go around talking about this kind of stuff. Well, naturally, he blabbed it all over his hometown out there, and early the next morning, his little compound was invaded by, like, stormtroopers, all dressed in black, and three bulldogs. And they just rode right over all of his equipment and totally destroyed years and years of work. And he lived in fear for the next 5 years. Monsters sleeping in wrecked cars and looking for shelter from friends because he really never could figure out exactly who was after him. So two interesting things come out of that. This information may have been part of the package that that was obtained either at the time of Tesla's death or before that by those unscrupulous individuals that you like to talk about. And second of all, it's actually in use. So, you know, here's another example of our benevolent government making plans to do unsavory things with technologies that are not supposed to exist, but which have obviously been developed with our money.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose this friend of yours gave up fishing, too, after that event.
Oh, that kind of fishing, yes.
Yeah, at least with copper wire, we'll say.
Yeah, well, he's quite a guy. I have heard through the grapevine that he has recently made an attempt to resurface. And I guess he hasn't been shot or anything. So I would really love to reestablish communication with him. But he's out there somewhere on the West Coast. That's all I can tell you.
Do you think his, since you brought that up, do you think that the fact that he was able to pick up that signal was also recognized?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because that is one possibility right there. All receivers are actually transmitters also, simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so, depending on what kind of equipment this unknown group was using and how sensitive it was, the mere fact that a third party would break into that, essentially a circuit, because this is not radio, would probably be detected immediately. And maybe they even triangulated his position. So I'm not sure if his jabbering about what he heard in town was what got him in trouble, or if the people that he was listening in on knew he was listening.
Sure.
It's not really clear.
You know, that that description that you just gave reminds me of a phenomenon that exists in audio production. And that's if you turn up a power amplifier that's driving a set of speakers loud enough, and speak into the, let's say, into the woofer or the mid-range, or in some cases even the tweeter, you can regenerate that signal backwards through the system and have the sound come out the microphone.
Hmm.
It's not healthy for the microphone, but the...
Especially a crystal mic.
Yeah, but that process actually works. This is why you can have feedback to an extent. You know, the regeneration of the same signal. But it works in the opposite way, too. You can isolate, let's say, the microphone, put a microphone in one room, turn up the volume of the speakers, and speak into the area of the voice coil in the speaker, and it will transmit the sound as if it was a microphone, because it's the same principle.
Yeah, of course.
Just a different size diaphragm, that's all.
Essentially, the electrodynamics are the same.
Yes.
Well, anyway, so I just thought it was important to include that little anecdote. The next portion of the story, which is kind of interesting, occurred while I was still in the New York area. And I had my own marine company at the time. I was building automation systems for tugboats and small ships. And I had gotten a contract to do maintenance and other improvements on a hospital ship that used to be moored in the East River. And I was there every day for months. Well, what was interesting was, during this same period of time, I was introduced to a very incredible individual. I will just refer to him as the Frenchman. And this gentleman had been involved in centralized banking in Europe, not only him, but his whole family, for like three or four generations. And he and I became pretty, I wouldn't say good friends, but close associates might be a working word. And a lot of times I would walk from the hospital ship over to Wall Street and meet him for lunch. He wasn't a highfalutin type guy. He used to meet in some little pub somewhere and just have a corned beef sandwich or something. But he was actually selling or handling, whatever the proper term is, these off-balance sheet banking instruments for various companies. And he always had an attaché case full of these darn things. And some of them had face values of 500 million, a billion, five, you know, all these different numbers. And very interesting to see. And he was the guy who started to explain to me about the Fed and how it has nothing to do with the United States government whatsoever. And after I started meeting with this guy on a fairly regular basis, I started to notice some strange things. And one day I come up out of the engine room and I'm standing on the bridge of the hospital ship. And I see a helicopter, maybe a quarter of a mile away. It certainly wasn't far anyway, sitting on a pier in the river. And she was running, her blades were turning. The craft was completely black. There was no number on it anywhere that I could see. And I just stood there. I was taking a break anyway. I was cleaning my hands with a rag. And all of a sudden, the thing went airborne and approached the ship. And it got so close that I darn near was concerned about how far I actually was from the blades. But I realized that if the pilot had been flying that thing for a long time, he probably knew the limitations of the vehicle better than me. And I wouldn't flinch for all the tea in China. So I just stood there and glared at it. And it just stood there and glared at me. And the windshield was completely black. You couldn't see into that craft, no way, no how. And I'll bet you that thing stood there in the air for a good 5 minutes before it decided it wasted enough gasoline and it took off. And I always thought that was kind of an interesting little happening.
Sounds like a Federal Reserve helicopter, huh?
I don't know what it was. I'm not even going to venture a guess.
Now, but, how did you know that that was a female chopper?
What do you mean?
you referred to the chopper as she. So
oh.
I'm making light of what you said here.
I guess that's the association with the aircraft industry over the years coming out, you know.
I'm aware. I'm just
planes are often female.
Yes. Well, with the amount of noise they make, I see why.
I'm not touching that, Don.
Just another crazy joke, folks. Okay. So so what do you think the purpose of the chopper was then?
I don't know. I never saw it again, and nothing ever happened to me. But I can tell you one thing. The Frenchman had... a lot of connections, and a lot of them were in Switzerland. And we met for lunch one day after that, and he extended a very interesting offer to me. He said, how would you like to undertake a little project for us? I never even asked who us was. And I said, well, it depends on what it is. And he said, well, do you think you could locate somebody without being too obvious, because a certain group that I am connected with has a very pronounced interest in this man's work? And I said, well, I could try. I said, but why would you select me for such a task? And he said, well, two reasons. He said, first of all, he said, I know you well enough to know that you don't think linearly. And he said, and second of all, he says, this is a guy who moves in scientific circles, not political or you know, financial circles. And you've been rubbing elbows with people like that for years. You just might have a way of finding them. So I was kind of intrigued by that, and I said, okay, I'll take the challenge. It turned out that the guy they were trying to find was Professor Brown, who is the inventor of Brown's gas. And it took me a few months, but I found the guy. And Professor Brown and I became fairly good friends. And I submitted a report back to the Frenchman, which he fed into the system, whatever that is. And I never heard another word on it. Later, I kind of quizzed them on the issue, and What came out of it was, oh, we checked out the information you gave us. It was very accurate. But unfortunately, Professor Brown, he lived at the generosity of the Chinese government in Mongolia for 7 years doing secretive research, and he therefore constitutes a security risk to what we had in mind. And that's all I ever got out of that. But what was interesting about it was my friend, the Frenchman, had an office in the World Trade Center. And after 9/11, I never heard from him again. So I don't know if he was one of the casualties or if he flew the coop beforehand. He did mention that there were whisperings that something was going to happen in New York, but he never mentioned anything about the World Trade Center. So the story goes on from there.
Hmm, that's interesting. And then there's that twist of mystery and intrigue at the end.
Well, I don't know what the end is. I'm fully expectant that we'll discover that together.
Yeah. Okay, so now have we covered the Tesla issue in terms of the wireless? I think we have. You spent some time on that.
Well, the reason that I went into these other issues is because mm-hmm. these are all situations which have a direct bearing on the way that I was forced to move through life while pursuing Tesla's knowledge. And in the upcoming book, which I will eventually finish writing, most of these things are spelled out in considerable detail.
You know, isn't it ironic that our tax dollars, to a great extent, I don't know how much, you know, money is involved. I do know that Tesla's research occasionally was supported by outside investors, John Jacob Astor and George Westinghouse, J.P. Morgan, maybe a couple other people that have not been published per se in any of the writings in regard to that. But I would presume that if the government was having Tesla work on some projects, that our tax dollars were paying for that. And yet we were, though it was very permissible to have us pay for that work, we were not made, or that work and the results of his research were not made readily available to us.
Well, where's the strangeness in that?
Oh,
God only knows what we've paid for that we don't reap any benefits from.
Yes, well, that's why I said, isn't it ironic? and it seems like it's not only is it ironic, but it's become dangerous. Historically,
well,
it's been.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, historically, it's and it seems that still that way today, that there much of this technology is so secretive. You have to ask yourself, well, why? Well, national security. Well, where's the security in being secretive? And if it's, you know, I don't know. I tend to get logical when I think about that stuff, because logic doesn't seem to matter at all. It's like, just
well,
give us the money and we're going to do with it what we will, and whatever we find is going to remain a secret because of national security.
Yeah, whatever that means.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a phrase, you know. It's like the term conspiracy theory. You know, it doesn't really mean anything. It's just, it sounds official.
Yeah.
You know.
Which means that it reeks of egotism and, you know, all the other nonsensical neuroses that seem to be manifest by the government as a collective body of individuals.
Yeah, and it's always the same people involved, too, you know.
Yeah, and I'm sure that when they leave the circle, the inner circle, they make sure that their replacement is just as perverted as they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you're talking about technology in these couple of instances that really could have catapulted humanity into a higher state of consciousness long ago. And
yeah, but they want us as meek little veggies. They're not looking for a planet full of thinking, creative individuals here.
Oh, yeah. And veggies is a good description, too, because the FDA is in control of that.
know? Yeah, they can come along and put a nice tag on your behind and certify that you're a cooperative vegetable.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. We could go off on puns. I won't do that. Okay, so here we are now. We're about out of time, actually. Believe it or not, this time just flew by. Did you get everything out that you intended to in this show, Jim?
Well, you know how it is, Don. I always try to make an outline that's got more information in it than we ever get to cover. And what we didn't do tonight, we'll do the next time, and hopefully there'll just be a continuous overlap into the future and until I run out of material, which probably won't happen too quickly.
Okay. Well, I think it would be interesting if we could, if you're aware of specific uses of the wireless that Tesla was interested in, something that we haven't covered, that might be a great point to continue this conversation next week.
You mean
I don't think his soul, I was going to say, I don't think his sole interest was just in submarines, although that would be worth delving into a bit.
Okay, so in other words, you mean Tesla's applications, not necessarily what could be done with it today.
Well, Tesla's applications, and then, of course, what might be done with it today is open for discussion. Why not? You know, it's quite possible that that's already being done. Again, it's just the national security issue. But I think it would be interesting to talk about that. So if you're in agreement, you know, we'll do that next week.
I'll put something together for you.
Okay, very good. Well, folks, we have run out of time. We'd like to thank you for listening to Evident Footprints and our special guest, Jim Murray. Jim will be back with us again next week. He's sort of got Friday locked up now. Barring any unforeseen schedule changes, he'll be with us next Friday. In the meantime, I want to wish everyone a wonderful weekend. I've got some great guests coming up next week, so be sure to tune in to bbsradio.com. Evident Footprints, I'm Don Nikoloff, your host. Thank you for listening in. Peace, love, and light, and good night.